Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Thursday, May 21st. I'm Olivia Rose. It's National Safe Boating Week, and the U.S. Coast Guard search and rescue teams are asking residents to help prevent false alerts. A false alert is any time the Coast Guard search and rescue systems are activated when there's no real emergency. But responders still have to treat it like it is one, says U.S. Coast Guard Arctic District Master Chief Greg Slusher.
If we can't get a hold of somebody in a pretty timely fashion, we've got to assume that, you know, we're dealing with distress and we'll launch appropriately.
False alerts happen often in Southeast Alaska, according to the Coast Guard. And when they do happen, it takes up emergency response resources, which are already limited and can endanger Coast Guard responders. False alerts can happen a few different ways. In Southeast Alaska, unmanned kayaks and paddleboards are often washed out onto the water, and someone reports it as a possible overturned vessel.
If we get that reported to us, we have to assume somebody was on it and fell off of it at some point, and so we're going to open up a search and rescue case and look into that further.
Slusher advises people to write their name and phone number on their kayaks and paddleboards so that emergencies can be ruled out quickly if they slip away accidentally. The Coast Guard also responds to emergency beacons or satellite communicators that have been triggered accidentally. Slusher says that's one reason why it's important to keep emergency position indicating radio beacons, or EPIRBs, registered and up to date.
We've all probably had our phone go off, and the next thing you know, you're calling 911 by accident. The best thing is to follow up and say, hey, I'm sorry, this is an accident. No harm, no foul.
Slusher says anyone can call the Coast Guard to report an accidental false alert at 1-855-406-8724. And as always, he advises people to share their boating plans with loved ones. Sitka High School's Career and Technical Education Program has long prepared students for the workforce, and this year it's expanding into new fields. This spring, students in the program worked in hospitals, dentist offices, and, for the first time, on the United States Coast Guard base. KCAW's Catherine Rose tagged along as one student prepared for her first helicopter flight with a crew from Air Station Sitka.
Coast Guard helicopter crew is standing around a long table in Air Station Sitka's hangar. They're suited up in orange, and Lieutenant Commander Mick Clackring is reviewing their flight plan for the day.
Flight plan, we're going to kind of go up Ogeneva Peril-ish, Tanaki, kind of the back way into Huna, do some low-vis practice in Huna for our approach and departure from there. Then we'll go over to Gustavus, get some coffee, do some sightseeing, go over to Cape Spencer Lighthouse, land there, and come back this way.
Sitka High School junior Bristol Clifton is standing at one end of the table, taking it all in. It's her first flight, and Clackring says it's about time.
Bristol's been around, gosh, for a couple months now, right? Like, since this whole semester was kind of in the idea, doing a bit of an internship, and now we're getting her airborne. Which sounds like it's a little late in the game, but we're gonna fix that.
Clifton is a lifelong Sitkan, and her interests reflect that fact. She loves the outdoors. She's planning to work as a fly fishing guide this summer. She likes math and science. Her eyes light up when she tells me she's also interning with the Sitka Sound Science Center's hatchery program. But she's really interested in aviation. In an interview weeks before today's helicopter flight, I ask her if she gets nervous when she's airborne, and she responds with a quick and comfortable nope. She's had a lot of exposure to flying. After all, you can't take the bus to an away game when you live on an island.
Obviously, just for like sports, because I do sports all year round. I do volleyball, basketball, and softball. So anytime we travel, it's flying. So I just feel like I fly all the time. And I don't know, I like going to different places in Alaska and like seeing different communities and stuff. I think it's really fun.
So for the past few months, Clifton has been at the air station twice a week. While she initially was interested in commercial aviation, she's eager to explore every path toward becoming a pilot.
My brother is a Marine, and my stepdad, he was also a Marine. I have family that's been in the military before, so I'm just interested in learning more about that, or like what they do, to see if I would want to go into the Coast Guard.
We've got a 5-point harness on this, so you'll have your buckle here, your two lap belts, your shoulder harnesses up here.
Back at the hangar, flight mechanic Cameron Rex shows Clifton where she'll be sitting on their flight today and reviews the safety protocol, including what to do in the event of an emergency.
Yeah, we have a sterile cockpit, but if you see something that is an emergency, if you see something we don't, feel free to speak up. You know, maybe it's an eagle coming our way. The eagles don't really respect us. They don't understand there's other predators in the sky or bigger things than them. And yeah, they'll be part of the crew in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Crystal clear? Or
yeah.
Clearing up?
Then they're off. The next day, she tells me, first they flew over some familiar territory.
We flew over my house, so that was cool. Got to see, like, I don't know, it just looks so much different from up there, obviously.
Over the next 4 hours, they flew to Hoonah, Gustavus, and landed at the Cape Spencer Lighthouse. And Clifton's ease with being in the air was helpful because, as the crew told her, it's not unusual to get a touch of motion sickness on the first flight.
Obviously, flying in like the big jets, like Alaska Airlines, like it's completely different because it's just so much smaller. Luckily, I didn't get like motion sickness, which I thought I was going to. And like at the beginning, I was kind of like a little like, whoa, like, because obviously it just feels different. But then I got used to it and I was fine.
Though it was overcast and a bit rainy, Clifton took everything in and got a lot out of it.
Like, you couldn't really see the tops of the mountains so much, but yeah, you could still see like all the ocean and like the muskags and everything.
Yeah, just to get to see everything just from a new perspective, I think is really cool.
So cool, she plans to go up in the Jayhawk again tomorrow. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
The Juneau Assembly voted Monday night to divest from the Eagle Crest Ski Area's gondola project and pay back a $10 million investment from Gold Belt Incorporated. The vote marks a reversal of the Assembly's controversial 2022 decision to purchase the gondola for the city-owned ski area. It comes after the Assembly learned the project's price tag would be nearly 4 times more than expected due to additional parts, high construction costs, and tariffs on imports. Despite backing out of the estimated $37 million project, Juneau taxpayers still fronted more than $12 million up to this point, which includes the payback to Gold Belt approved Monday night. Assembly member Alicia Hughes-Scandes said the Assembly should avoid making a mistake this big again. She was one of the few members on the Assembly who were around in 2022 when a slim majority of members voted to purchase the gondola. She voted against it back then.
Sincerely, I'm sorry that things went this way. And I think it's really important that we study it after it is over so we know that we're not going to make a magnitude of the same or a mistake of the same size.
With its initial purchase, the gondola was hailed as a saving grace for Juneau's ski area, which has struggled to maintain infrastructure and pay its staff without subsidies from the city. The ski area's plan to become self-sustainable was heavily reliant on the success of the gondola to promote summertime operations. But now that it's done for, the fate of Eagle Crest's future hangs in the balance. Last week, the Assembly voted to subsidize the ski area so it can stay open next season on a bare-bones budget, with a cut to nearly half of the staff. What will come after that is still up in the air. Mayor Beth Walden voted in favor of divesting from the project, despite originally voting in 2022 for the gondola's purchase.
We did not come up with the idea for the gondola. That was totally the general manager and the board at the time, and we grasped at the straw trying to save Eagle Crest. So call us gullible, call us naive, but that's what we were trying to do. So that was our intent.
Assemblymember Nano Brooks was the only member to vote against the decision. He argued the Juneau Assembly should hold off until next year to search for other options. About halfway between Juneau and Haines, there's a small rock with a big history. On it sits the Eldred Rock Lighthouse. The facility has been there for over a century, and today is the oldest original lighthouse in Alaska. It's been in disrepair for decades, but after years of restoration work by volunteers, the lighthouse will open to the public for the first time later this month. ahead of the grand reopening, the Alaska Desk's Avery Eltfeldt made the journey to the rock with a boat full of volunteers and has this story.
Some 24 people carefully hop from a large boat to a smaller one, and then onto a rocky island in the middle of Lynn Canal. The wind is whipping, and the boat lurches in the waves. Once on shore, they carry supplies uphill toward a red and white lighthouse perched high above the water. Inside, up several flights of stairs, a small group is hurriedly building bunk beds.
Oh, great, they're working. I love that. Keep going. Please build me a bed. I'd like that.
Tu York is the executive director of the Eldred Rock Lighthouse Preservation Association. The nonprofit is dedicated to restoring the lighthouse, which first opened in 1906. Keepers lived and worked here until the 1970s, when the U.S. Coast Guard started automating lighthouses across the state. Since then, York says, the only longer-term known residents were of a different kind.
The doors left open, and these sea otters came in and spent the winter up in the attic. And they crapped everywhere. And so the first job that some of the volunteers did was put on a respirator and Tyvek to clean up otter crap.
York and volunteers from Haines and Juneau recently journeyed to Eldred Rock to build bunks and work on other projects in the final days before the lighthouse opens to the public. The reopening is the culmination of years of work by the nonprofit, its many volunteers, and paid contractors. Moving forward, the space will be used for artist retreats, family getaways, and weddings, all organized by the preservation group. There will also be tours offered by a local operator, which will help fund ongoing restoration efforts. Perhaps most important, though, is that the lighthouse and the stories it holds will once again be intact. York says it's impossible not to feel like part of history.
When you come out here and you feel you sleep where the keepers slept, and you take care of the light that the keepers took care of, and you watch the boats go by, you know, the ferry every day, the Fiordland.
For others, the reopening offers a chance to relive their own history.
So I still haven't been out to the rock, well, since 1970.
That's Ralph Crane. He's 75 and lives in Homer. But he spent 2 years at Eldred Rock when he was just 19 years old. Crane spent his days here operating the light and radio beacon, making weather reports every hour on the hour, and doing everyday chores.
Like I say, it was the best and worst time of my life, and a lot more best than worst.
When Crane was off duty and the weather cleared, he, the other keepers, and their two dogs,
Kenmore and Pee-Pee,
would take the boat out to set crab pots, fish, and comb nearby beaches. He says the restoration is a labor of love that amounts to keeping history alive. He's planning to drive to Haines from Homer with his daughter for the opening ceremony. They'll camp along the way there and back. Crane says he's thrilled his former home has been restored and is excited to return.
That's a lot of history to just see crumble into disrepair. It was heartbreaking for me to... knowing how we kept that thing, and then to have it literally abandoned.
A big part of the cleanup effort has been dealing with widespread lead contamination and making sure the area is safe for the public. It's been a major feat. So far, the restoration has cost more than $500,000. York says making matters more complicated is the reality that doing any work requires hauling people and equipment to the island, often in bad weather.
It's the worst weather in North Lynn Canal. So our challenge has always been and always will be transportation and safety coming on and off the island. So we have to make tough decisions.
On the morning of the most recent trip, volunteers from Haines loaded stacks of lumber onto a 50-foot aluminum boat known as the Taz. But rough seas meant those supplies never made it on shore, and that the day's work was cut short. York had to ask most volunteers to pack up early and quickly get off the rock. A handful stayed behind. They'll spend the week here, working toward ensuring it's ready for visitors in just a few days' time. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Eltfeldt.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.